I am expecting 8 sitters in the room. It was a short notice that all 8 groups must come at one time in the morning. Usually we take 4 in the morning and take 4 after lunch. But because the parliamentary program has changed, and it was necessary that instead of saying you must come next week or you must reschedule, we must just bring you all in this morning. And I know that you have long presentations. Some of you, they present more than 20, 30 minutes. Because you are 8, what we are interested as the committee is for you to tell us what is that you have done with the money that was allocated to you. That's our primary interest. Also, you must talk to the notes that came from your the AG so that you also tell us how have you dealt with those issues that have been raised as a concern, or what is that you are planning to do about that. And if there are issues that you think we should know, please bring them to the front, but that will be the focus of your discussions today. We don't want your mission and vision statements. That we don't need them today. And any motivations as why this CETA has come into being, because we really want to get the gist of how you have used the taxpayers' money. And you are all welcome in Parliament. We will give the opportunity of introducing the delegations to the chairpersons or the CEOs, whoever is leading the delegation in the House, so that you can know who's around. I think we have met, but for those who are meeting us for the first time, there are 6 members of Parliament that are here now, and I'm sure the others will join you in the process. We have Mr. Olive, who's a member of the committee from the DA, is seated there. We have Mr. Ndlovu, who is from IFP. You have seen the hand. We have Mr. Makubela from the ANC. We have Honorable Nyekemba from the ANC. We have Honorable Khumalo from the ANC. And you have Yengeni from the ANC. I thank you. So the sitter that will be starting is Fieta. If you are ready, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Shall we know how to handle this now? We had prepared slides that might not be talking to that, but as we go through those that we've prepared, we'll try and talk to all the issues that you have raised. We're from the forest industries. Education and Training Authority. We're in a sector that's divided into 4, not just forest. Most people think we're just forest, but we're divided into 4. We have furniture. We have wood products. We have pulp and paper and forestry itself. I'd like to first introduce my delegation, because it's mostly industry based, and the membership that is here or delegation is also from the various industries. I'll start on my left is Mike Trulock, who's the chairperson of the authority. We have Asha, CFO. We have Jane Malone, who represent the paper manufacturers of South Africa. We have Roger Gottmark, who represents in the board Forestry South Africa. Martin Bedwessel, Wood Products. Michael Seth, finisher, and deputy chair, Mike Mukwana. As we all know, the board is comprised of obviously business and labor, but we have the Department of I need to say Water Affairs and Forestry, but that has changed now. The fisheries represented in our board. We don't have a large board. It's 16 members coming from those various stakeholders that I've mentioned. The board has subcommittees. We have the chambers. The chambers represent the various industries within the our forest industry sector. So all the people that are with me here come from those various industries and subsectors. Obviously, as required by the PSMA, we've got the audit committee, which I'll touch it on it, and obviously the ESCO. I've already mentioned the number of organizations that are represented in there, except the sawmilling South Africa, which is experiencing some very difficult times with a number of sawmills closing. In terms of labor, we have the consulty affiliates also been part of the board. In terms of the audit committee, or which also acts as the finance committee, the chairperson is an independent person. Sitting as observers in our audit committee is the auditor general. Our internal auditors, SFDNT, and then obviously our members are also from our stakeholder organization. Members are financially literate, and we're using an audit committee charter. We also, the internal auditors also are governed by the internal audit charter. We have a 3-year coverage risk coverage plan based on a risk profile that we update annually. We also have a fraud prevention policy and a response plan should there be fraud. In terms of the management of grants and funds, as we all know, there are a number of grants in the sector, the mandatory grants and the discretionary grants. In terms of mandatory grants, we pay WST based on 50% implementation of the workplace skills plan that was submitted the previous year, and we pick up a sample of 10% to verify if there was implementation of that plan. Our guys go out there to companies to verify on whether the planning that was in the WST and the report that's in the annual planning report to verify if those have been done by calling for registers, certificates, graduation ceremonies, and any evidence that can be used to show implementation of the plan. So it's not like companies or employers are given grants and just be left alone. We don't do the whole population, though we are doing a kind of verification of the implementation. In terms of discretionary grant projects, also we don't just deposit money to people's accounts. There are various ways that we use to manage those funds. so that at the end of the day we can get a return on our investment. And one of the main things we use is agreements, obviously, service level agreements, which will state the purpose and of the intervention, the intended results, the roles of parties, and the duration of the intervention, and how we're going to manage also the attendance by learners, because we've seen that in some projects, as I've mentioned in the previous meeting, that usually the stipend becomes a problem. Where you are giving a stipend, like in learnership, you can retain a number of these learners, but where you're not giving a stipend, you are challenged by a number of issues, including food and transport, particularly in rural provinces where people have to travel long distances. You need to assist there, and that some of the issues that come out that learners will move from one course to another to sort of stay employed. We track learners. We started late, but we are doing it. So far, we've tracked about 5,000 learners. We know where they are and what they are doing, and we have a database of all the learners that have been tracked. It's not easy to track learners. Others, they move to Australia. Others, they pass on. Others, they change cell phones. Suppose trying to run away from credit. others, go ahead and get into further training. But we have a database for whoever is interested in knowing where the learners are going. But we are training learners. We have been tracked all learners that have been involved in our interventions from the beginning. But to this point, those that we have reliable information on is about 5,000.
If I could add to those two slides that you've just seen, in the pack, that's the financial year pack that is at the back, you will notice that we run the projects per chamber or per area of the business, the four particular areas, and in that you've got both learnerships as well as skills programs. So you ask the question, what do we do and how do we ensure that the money that we spent is spent wisely? Developed around that is every single project that is managed in terms of that. And at the moment we're managing 96 projects, so there's a lot of work going on. But there is a SLA and various other issues, both in skills programs and learnerships, that is measured around that. If we look at the project that we're running, we are also doing a lot of work in the artisan area, as well as a National Skills Fund project that comes to the end of its third year life in this particular year. We're proud of the fact that in terms of that, we've got some very good numbers, but we've also learned some harsh lessons through that process. We look at the, we called it Bulumatuba. We were given, we asked for 100 million for 360 qualifications that we wanted, and those were based mainly on higher level education qualifications. So there were 3-year diplomas, and the artisan process was 3 years. So not based on the 1-year learnership process. The national diplomas in pulp and paper that we used was a 3-year, and as well as the 22 million that we were given from National Skills, we added 10 million from our own funds. We have progressed reasonably well. The next slide, when we look at numbers, we're looking at the fact that we had certain targets in pulp and paper. We're looking at a national diploma. We recruited 50 people of the 60. It was difficult to get them spread over the country to take on a 3-year learnership and finish it within the 3 years, because a lot of our students from all over the country do distance learning and take a lot more than 3 years. You'll see by that we've got 28 on track to finish their diploma, but we've still got around 50 in the process that'll extend past the project to finish. The internships were linking with FETs. We've had a sad reality check there. We had very little money in terms of the stipends, and although people are looking for the 1 year of practical around their 3-year national diploma in engineering,
We have found that very few have actually taken it up without stipends to go along with that. So we're struggling with that. The management diploma is a 1 year. The apprenticeships we're very proud of. We will have all 170 through the program in the 3 years. We're busy looking at some of them. I think there are 20 of them that are finished at this time. There you can see the enrolled and where we are, where we've talked about, and we covered all the sectors as we looked at it.
There are challenges. If we won't say that things are running smooth. One of the challenges would be we would train these learners. Some of them, as they get qualified, then they get fired. As employers are trying to save on costs because of this economic recession, we find that the learners that for example, let's take they had about six that qualified in Mpumalanga, but the sawmill had to cut down on the number of employees. So we have the learners that have been through the program are qualified, but they had to be let go because most employers believe that artisans expensive. They rather, keep maintenance of things running using outsourced services. Obviously, there had been one or two accidents as we're training these learners, which have been fully reported to the Department of Labor, where one learner was blown off in an electric pole. But also they didn't follow health and safety issues. And obviously the issue of stipend, where our learners are getting smaller stipends while learners from other institutions would get higher stipends, so we'll have a dropout where learners will choose who pays the most and they will go to the program that gives the most stipend.
One of the very exciting things that we've been involved with is developing vocational training qualifications. We're looking at developing a model for school leavers where the compulsory leaving age is grade 9, and then they can go straight into vocational training at EPT colleges. We've signed agreements with the Umfolozi College, and we have an agreement with one in Springs, and then we also have something with NMMU done in Port Elizabeth. Mike, do you want to add something? Oh, okay, maths and science technology programs. I don't know how many of you realize, but a paper machine requires more technology, a lot more technology than a Boeing 747. So we really need skilled people. And we are passionate about training. Math and science, we give support to students that come out of school without good maths and science to ensure that they can cope with our programs. And we have a ladder of learning right through from Abbott and recognition of prior learning right up to a master's degree. As far as the sector, we also have always been involved with project programs to develop students and to ensure that we have the skilled people for the sector.
We have serious problems with the school leaving levels of maths and science and are having to spend significant numbers of hours and second people from the industry to help with the maths and science curriculum. And in fact, in the pulp and paper learnerships on Bula Matuba, the majority of people who are a few years behind are because of that. And they will take an extra year. What we should have done in hindsight is put in a bridging year outside of school for that.
Isn't there are challenges, obviously, also for young people. Also for our young people don't really believe in the forest industry. I don't think they find it sexy. So they would prefer to go to other industries. So we also spend a lot of money trying to promote the forest industries, because for them it's like forest and snakes and dust, and So with your help also, I would like to hear you some of the times in public saying, you know, the forest industry is one of the industries in which learners can get into, particularly those sectors like furniture where people can get trained and start their own businesses. Obviously, in pulp and paper, you need a couple of millions to set up a mill. But there are those sub-industries like forestry and furniture where learners don't need to go and look for employment, but they can start their own businesses.
Madam Chair, with regard to recession, what we have done is that we have committed an amount of $8 million. Now, that money is aimed at assisting companies that are in distress. And so far we have received one application, that is Mondi Packaging. The Mondi Packaging is divided into three divisions. One is in Springs, the other one is in Richards Bay, and the other one is in Bitretief. And we are assisting that company in terms of accessing the NSF funding, that is through the CCMA processes. So that is basically the application that we have received. But what we have done also as a CETA is to extend that funding to retrenched employees. Because currently our concern is that already some of the companies have retrenched. So we believe that we've got an obligation to also assist those employees that have been retrenched. And we have actually put guidelines in terms of how are we going to assist those employees. But also we have said that we are not going to wait for them to approach us. What we are doing, we've got roadshows as well to make sure that we reach out to those employees who have been retrenched. And, yeah, that is basically what is happening, and we are expecting to receive a number of applications because we know a lot of companies within our sector have been retrenching. So that is basically what we have done with regard to the recession funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the financial highlight for 2008-2009, CETA had a very good financial year. The SDL income was 69.3 million rand. That was 80% more than what we received in the last financial year. So we had, in terms of the levy income, we had a very good year. The total revenue that we earned for the last financial year was 82.6 million rand, and a big portion, about 7.2 million rand, was earned through interest. That funding is then used for additional projects that we can run during the year. The total expenditure for the last financial year was 86.5 million rand. We paid out 31.7 million rand in terms of the mandated grant expenses. And 8.6 million rand in terms of the admin expenses. You will note that we had a deficit for this financial year. Now, in terms of public sector, a deficit is very positive. Deficit means that you're using all your funding for the current financial year as well as your reserve funding that you have in the bank account. So it means that all the funding that we have in our reserve account, we actually started to utilize them and see projects starting to roll out and the money starting to get used up. In terms of the cash and cash equivalents, we had 56.8 million rand. That decreased from about 68 million rand that we had in the last financial year. And this shows that that CETA is actually expending and using all of its funding that it has. In terms of the last financial year, we received an unqualified audit report, and we have done so in the last 8 years. Also, something to highlight is that our mandated grant payout percentage increased from 61% to 73.32%. This also shows that we're increasing our stakeholder base, and a lot more companies are starting to submit their WSPs to us. In terms of the last financial year, we also had an allocation of 90% of our discretionary funding. That means we've committed those to projects and running useful projects and projects that will help our sector.
Okay.
Thanks. So you don't have any concerns from the Auditor General?
There were no issues raised from
okay.
the Auditor General.
Thank you. Thank you. Health and Welfare Sector Education and Training Authorities. Thank you very much, Sita. The questions will be asked when you are all done with the presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Corey Schmidt. I'm the CEO of the Health and Welfare CETA. With me, I have my CFO, Elaine Pratt, and our Vice Chairperson, Ms. Nomzat Lamini. We apologize for our chairperson, who is unfortunately in hospital with a serious illness, and she will not be able to join us today. I also have with me board members and staff members sitting in the audience. Madam Chair, because we are aware of the time, I'm going to just skip through quite a number of slides because they were background slides that would give you a background of the Health and Welfare CETA. I was going to tell you that about 18,000 of our companies are focusing on the doctor and specialist areas. Most of our employers are in the Gauteng area with a sprinkle of private doctors and service providers across all the other provinces. That we have a large non-profit sector, and most of these non-profit organizations are in the Gauteng, KwaZulu, and Limpopo areas. And that we most of our employees in our sector are in fact female. Just skipping across to the National Skills Development Strategy, you'll see that the Department of Labor has rated our performance as exceeding expectation. 14 of the 19 indicators were scored at 4 or 5 scores. We had 3 areas where we had difficulties, but we are quite hopeful that by the end of this financial year, 16 of the 19 areas will be scored at 4 or 5 scores. I'm not going to go through the achievements of the NSDS because of the time constraints. And I'm going to skip most of what's in the annual report anyway to allow my CFO to focus on the financials rather than the actual background that I was going to sketch. Towards the end, I'm going to come back in and explain some of our discretionary grants that we're dealing with.
Good morning. I would like to first of all start off with our audit committee and the composition of our audit committee, a very important committee of the HWCETA. We have an independent chairperson, 3 external independent members, and including 2 board members. The chief financial officer and CEO also sit on the committee. We also then have our internal auditors, the Auditor General of South Africa, that are invited to all committee meetings. The committee concentrates on, amongst a lot of their responsibilities, they concentrate on risk management, as well as looking at both the internal and external audit reports, and they monitor internal controls and whether we have a sound internal control system in place. In terms of our annual financial statements of 2008-2009, the audit committee also reported on that. They have indicated that we have a good system of internal control, that it is effective, efficient, and transparent, that we have an internal audit function in place, which is also effective, and we have risk management. And all the Auditor General recommendations of the previous year, 2007-2008, were addressed. The annual financial statements, you'll actually have a look at the graph on the presentation board, and in the current financial year, which is the far left, 2008-2009, we had an unqualified audit report. 2007-2008, also unqualified audit reports. And you can see the significant improvement from the 2006-2007 financial year, where we improved significantly on both governance issues and compliance issues. Just a brief overview of the financial statements. I won't go through everything, but I just want to highlight a few important aspects. We have prepared our financial statements in accordance with the PFMA and Treasury regulations, so in other words, SA GAAP and GRAP. We did have a surplus from operations of 48 million rand. 38 million of the 48 million rand was due to mandatory grants, underspending on mandatory grants. I'll actually explain that a bit later. We have spent within our administration allowed in terms of the administration revenue we have collected, so we haven't overspent on that. We have good financial controls in place at the HWCTA, and we had no material adjustments to the financial statements. Our investments were also prudent, and in terms of our policy and treasury regulations. We had no prior year adjustments, and we had no events after balance sheet dates. And then I'll actually just go to the next slide, thanks. Then in terms of our income, it's increased quite steadily over the period. And that's just a summary of our SDL revenue. That's increased up to 160 million in the current financial year, 2008-2009. Our government departments have supported us quite greatly in 2008-2009 with an increase of 51% compared to prior year. Interest income is quite high due to our cash reserves on hand. That's 22 million, which we use for discretionary grant funding. Our employer grants and project expenditure also increased quite significantly in 2008-2009 by 26%. So we are putting more money back into our stakeholders for various projects and funding. Our administration expenditure, 41 million, and then I explained the 48 million surplus. 38 relates to mandatory grants, and 9.3 was underspending on administration. That's just a graph to indicate that our administration income is above our administration expenditure. And the next few slides is just some information on our administration expenditure where we've had increases, but I actually won't go into that due to time constraints. On that slide, the second graph on the page is grants paid, and as you can see, our total grants paid has also increased significantly over the last 3 years. So we're actually quite proud of that, and we're actually ensuring that that continues to be the case and that we continue to increase that significantly in the next few years. Our grants, as I've indicated, we had 38 million surplus on mandatory grants, and that's because of the participation of our stakeholders in submitting a WSP to the HWCTA at the required timeline of 30 June each year. So, in other words, we only managed to pay out 61% of the funds allocated to be paid back in mandatory grants. Unfortunately, we have actually embarked on various capacity building workshops to encourage participation by our sector.
and then I'll hand over to the CEO. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just to talk on our discretionary reserve, we have about 194 million rand locked in discretionary commitments. And I'll just highlight some of the bigger projects. There are 19 projects in total. Learnerships, we've got 95 million allocated to it. Internships, about 12 million. Bursaries, 22 million, that we support young learners at university. Some 9 million in work experience grants, 32 million rand in special funding. And the special funding allows us to support government type structures, such as people with disabilities, women, children, and so on. And then the rest there are just smaller numbers making up the balance. I think I must just also mention that one of the slides that I did skip earlier on was our training layoff scheme. The CETA board has approved 16 million rand for a training layoff. We've launched it at our annual congress or conference last month. We have pamphlets and available, and it's also circulating on through some of our workshops and forums that we're holding at the moment to make employers aware of it. To date, we have had no application against the 16 million rand. We have 16 million rand in the current year, and we set aside another 16 million rand in the next year. Although we're advertising it widely, it is not expected that there will be a great take-up. In the health and welfare sector, there's a skill shortage, and whoever steps forward as a nurse, a doctor, or a caregiver is immediately snapped up. We don't foresee a heightened use of our funding at this point in time. That concludes our presentation, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the presentation. So we'll go to the third sitter. Is it? As soon as you are ready, you can begin.
Morning, Madam Chair and committee members. This is Asset CETA, standing for Information Systems, Electronics and Telecommunications Technology. With me here in front, I have Babongile, who is our Chief Financial Officer. I have Opamopaki, who is our Chief Executive Officer. There are other board members behind us. I'll request them to, with a show of hands. I have Mr. Tumelo More, standing for interest groups in Asset CETA Board. I have also Garland Robert from Labour Stakeholder as well. I have also with us Keith standing for Business Stakeholder. And we also have in our midst my Deputy Chairperson, Andile Kwayele. Yeah. It's not here. I didn't know that. Thank you once more. This is the report for the financial year 2008-2009, as it stands. As Madam Chair has already requested, we will try to be brief. Our presentation is focusing amongst all as listed as a CETA overview, staff complement, sector skills planning and research division, learning programs division, education and training, quality assurance division, finance. Will be followed by questions and answers from the audience. Mine will be to indicate to the portfolio committee that in our sector we have 128 companies employing over and above 150 employees, which represent 5.3% of the total levy paying companies. Companies that employ 50 to 149 employees, we have 240, which represent 9.9% of the total levy paying companies. I must also indicate that the next column there indicates the total number of employees represented by those companies in those in the different company size categories. The small companies in our sector that employs 1 to 149 employees, as we see on the slide, they are in the majority of 2,060, which represent a total of 84.8%, employing a total number of employees at 30,692. If we look at percentage-wise of employees versus company size, we'll see that small and medium companies are actually competing more to as compared to the companies that take 50 to 149. They are almost doubling their total employees. So the totals for the levy paying companies, we have 2,428 at present for the financial year or under review. And the total number of employees for the financial year under review is 141,929. This slide also indicates to the House the representativity of our three sectors. The green one is telecoms sector with 45,449, which represents 32%. Electronics sector has got 21,196, which represents 15%, followed by our IT sector at 75,284, largely indicating as the highest in ISET CETA. Once more, also the total number of employees represented in the sector for the year under review at 141,929,000.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You have indicated that the key to our presentation should be what is it that we've done with the money. I need to indicate, Madam Chair, that we have taken a cue from the National Skills Development Objectives in terms of what is it that we've done with the funds that we have received as a CETA. We have achieved the first targets, and I mean the first targets between ourselves and the Department of Labor. In most cases, we've actually overachieved in terms of our targets as a CETA. We have a couple of challenges, of course, as we went along achieving those targets. One of the challenges that we have as a CETA is that we believe that when we receive workplace plans and annual training reports from companies, there should be, let me call it, you know, an extended audit into what it is that we have received from companies when they give us workplace plans and annual training reports. We are aware that legislation says companies should submit workplace plans and annual training reports, and when they do that, we should pay back 50% of what we've received to them. Our CETA does not have capacity to go out and audit the performance of companies when they have trained people and when they submit annual training reports to us. We don't have the capacity to go out and audit so that we satisfy ourselves that training has actually taken place in the workplace. Now, with 50% of the funds that we receive as a CETA, we place reliance on companies to train the current employees through the 50% that they receive. And the reason I'm saying this is that most of the time the blame comes to CETA that perhaps CETA have failed to train workers, they failed to train learners and so on. But employers receive 50% of the funds, Madam Chair. And if you look at how we report in terms of the information coming from employers with regard to training, we report there, for example, that we have companies that employ 50 and above. You know, we report that we have companies that have 1 to 49. These are just numbers of companies that submitted workplace skills plans. But the question is, what is the impact of the training that took place in workplaces? Because we are just giving numbers in terms of participation. So it is more of compliance as opposed to performance. So I think we need to get to a point where joint responsibility is taken between us as CETAs and employers in terms of what is it that we have done with the national skills levies. We get to a situation, Madam Chair, that when we get in the middle of the year, let's say 6 months after the beginning of a financial year, we find that we, one, in terms of the discretionary fund, we actually ask employers to submit proposals to train learners, one, in learnership, two, in graduate internship programs. And the reason we're doing this is that we want skills development in the ICT sector to be employer-led. If skills development is not employer-led, we were caught in a situation at some point where we trained quite a number of learners, and we find that we have placed in the region of about 40% of the learners trained or learners who went through learnerships. And the employers were saying to us, the reason why we're sitting with about 30-40% employment was because this training was ICT-led training. And they were sort of trying to tell us that perhaps the training that we implement was not relevant. That's why we feel that employers should lead the process of uptake in terms of learnerships and graduate internship programs. Now, when we do that, 6 months down the line, starting from April, we find in the ICT sector that most of the companies had submitted proposals to implement graduate internships and learnerships. But we find ourselves sitting with something in the region of 60 million rand after employers had come forward to implement learnerships and graduate internship programs. That puts us in a very difficult situation to spend 60 million rand between May or so of every year towards March the following year. And we don't want to go out and spend money simply because we have it. Now, we do have programs running with the Department of Communications, with the municipalities and so on, to make sure that we respond to the question of e-government. The challenge that we are having when we do that, training unemployed people in various municipalities, we are caught with this obligation / requirement that says 70 or 80% of learners trained should be placed in employment on completion of a learnership or a graduate internship program. Now, it forces us then to sort of work on the numbers to say, if we have worked jointly with employers, for example, and employers have trained 100 learners, we're trying to manage a situation such that we put an obligation on employers to employ 80% of the learners trained. But when employers are no longer coming forward and you're sitting with 60 million rand and you want to go out and train unemployed people elsewhere, and you add another 3,000 on a number that you already have, it reduces the 80% target in terms of a CETA performance probably to a 20%. And the problem now when we report to the Department of Labor with regard to placement on completion of a learnership, that is a key performance area. Now, any CETA that's going to be spending, in our case, in the region of 300 million rand on training, and I come here, Madam Chair, and we say to you, after we have spent all the money and we've trained all the people, only 20% of the learners have been trained, will be seen to have underperformed. So the placement, the question I'm raising here, Madam Chair, is that we need to strike a balance between the requirement to train for employment and also the requirement to train because we want to build a critical mass. And there shouldn't be that restriction and in between, you know, so that unemployed learners elsewhere are given an opportunity to do learnerships. So we are also working with FET colleges as preferred training providers in the ICT sector. We believe that we have achieved quite a lot in terms of our collaboration with FETs and the Department of Communications. I think I've covered, you know, quite a number of areas. Madam Chair, let me hand over to our Chief Financial Officer to talk to the slides on the financials. Thank you.
Good day, all. Okay, I'll just start talking. The slides will follow. The financial performance. The ICTSA had SDL income, interest, and penalties of 321 million rand compared to 279, which was received in the previous year. That was approximately 15% increase on prior year. And this proves that the ICTSA has increased in the companies that are registered with it and are levy paying. We also, another item that I would like to address is the investment income, which shows an increase of 61%. The income of 17.7 million this year compared to 11 million in the prior year. The rest of the slide, I don't think I need to read. You can read. Got employer grant expenses of 228 million and admin expenses of 28 million.
Further to that, in terms of the Auditor General, it is noted in our annual report that we have fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This came due to the fact that around 2001, at our previous premises, we had a burglary. So our computers were stolen and some information disappeared. And then, of course, there were monies owed to the SARS in terms of pay as you earn and so on. And the SARS only came to us about 18 months ago to remind us that we have pay as you earn outstanding since 2001. And, of course, we had to pay that with interest. That's why we have that item.
If I could just add to that, what has been done since we have been backing up the server on a daily basis, and we've got the files stored off-site to prevent this from happening again, and also pay-as-you-earn is being monitored and being paid prior to the deadline so that interest and lab and penalties will not be incurred in the future. There was also one other issue that was picked up by the AG of a breakdown on some internal controls during the current financial year. This was picked up during the interim audit in January, but also according to the AG's report, this was fixed at year end. They found that most of the controls were working. We are carrying on with those internal controls as we speak.
Madam Chair, in terms of the training layoff scheme, we do not have, unbelievably so, companies in the ICT sector coming to us and telling us that they intend retrenching people. We also know that there is a debate that has been going on for some time that we have a critical skills shortage in the ICT sector. Perhaps the challenge that we're sitting with as a CETA is that we are an ICT CETA, and we talk about the ICT landscape. Now, the reason I'm making a distinction between ICT and ICT is that when we talk about ICT, we confine it to the designated area as we are designated as a CETA by the Department of Labor. So we're talking about ICT and we're talking about levy paying companies to the ICT. But we are also aware that there are ICT requirements in the banking sector, in the construction, in all facets of our lives we have ICTs. And it is difficult for us as a CETA to get to appreciate nationally exactly what is the skills needs in the ICT sector. Now, it is very recent. We need to be starting to collaborate more and more with other CETAs to see the kind of research conducted by other CETAs if there are areas of ICTs needed in those areas so that we have a comprehensive strategy to address the skills shortage in the ICT sector. With regards to all the top levy paying companies in the ICT space, those that are paying levies to us, none of the companies actually came to us, one, and said they want to retrench. Two, none of the companies came to us and they said to us they have a critical skills shortage. Now I'm talking about the Telkom, the Vodacom, the Cell C. But of course, when you read in the media, we are told that there is a critical need of skills shortage. I think we need to find a way of closing that gap so that as a nation, we speak one language. We cannot be sitting, for example, as a CETA currently, we're sitting with about 120 million rand that we want to make available to companies to do graduate internship programs. If, of course, there are graduates out there who still need employment and they should be upskilled to join the ICT sector, we have the funds available to upskill them and train them and to get them into the ICT sector. But employers are not coming forward to do that. Now, if there is a critical skills shortage in the ICT sector and we have funds available, the question is, why are those companies not coming forward to train learners unless perhaps they don't have that need for skills? But I do not want to enter into this debate, but I felt I just want to highlight it, that we really need to do more to find exactly if indeed we have a critical skill shortage in ICTs, or perhaps we have a projection that we need to train more and more people going forward so that we start separating the two issues. As we are sitting as the ICT, that we are not convinced that we have a critical need of skills based on the companies that we are working with.
Madam Chair, as I said, CETA would like to thank you and the Portfolio Committee for giving us the opportunity to present our annual report to you. Thank you.
We also thank you for the information provided to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next CETA is Inspector.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, fellow CETA functionaries and officials. It gives us great pleasure to present you today. Thank you, Madam Chair, once again. In some ways, it reminds me of actually drinking from a fire hose, given the time constraints that we have. But we'll keep it fairly high level, and if there are questions, obviously, at the end, we could look at the issues in a more focused way. Just to kick off, I'd like to introduce our delegation. My name is Rama Govindan. I'm the Deputy Chair of INCETA. On my right is our CEO, Sandra Dunn. On my immediate left is Margie Naidu, who is a board member. Next to Margie is Marius Kerber, who is one of our outsourced partners dealing with finance. And on our extreme left is Terence Berry, another board member. Thank you. I'd like to hand over to the CEO now to present.
In the interest of time, I'm just going to skip through the slides, but I think I'd like to start by just giving a brief profile of the insurance sector, which employs in excess of 137,000 people. You will see on the slide that is on the screens the breakdown of the subsectors, namely long-term insurers, short-term insurers, pension fund administrators, etc. Not included in the insurance sector is banks. Around the in-situ corporate governance matters, the in-situ has, for the past 9 years, received unqualified audits. In the period under review, there was one investigation, and that has subsequently been resolved. The council and management at the in-situ are committed to ensuring that the in-situ continues to operate at the highest levels of integrity and meet the needs of its stakeholders. I'll hand over now to Marius Herber, our CFO, in the sector of the financial management.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. The in terms of size, the in-situ earned 188 million rand in levy income, which was an increase of around 14%, which is a substantial increase on the prior year. In-situ maintained well their admin expenditures and were able to still have a surplus on their administration expenditure, which then becomes available for spending on discretionary grants. In-situ is proud of the mandatory grant percentage that it, or payout percentage that it receives. 50% of our levies that we receive, we return to 88% of our levy-paying companies. And that we've been trying to increase that percentage steadily, and that shows good participation from our sector. And overall, of the reserve monies that we have available, we have allocated to future projects 126 million rand for spending, and our actual spending for the year was 50%, which is close and running constantly at about 60% payout ratio. So all in all, in terms of financials, the in-situ is being fabulous.
Thanks, Marius. Some of the highlights from our annual report, this is also presented to our stakeholders at the AGM. The provincial presence that the in-situ has been working in the past year in terms of just getting a better provincial footprint. This will continue into future years and looking at broadening the presence of in-situ in the provinces. The other highlight was the Institute of Sectoral Excellence grants, whereby three institutes were awarded this grant, bringing to 8 the total number of institutions to date that have been supported. There was a strong focus in the past in the period under review on quality assurance. When in-situ was reaccredited for a second phase as an ECQA with SAQA. Along with that was the verification of learning delivery and achievements. And during the year, 1,962 learners were accredited for the achievements of full qualifications and 2,240 unit standards achieved through short programs. Provider accreditation and monitoring and auditing continues to be a focus for in-situ. An additional 11 training providers have been awarded primary accreditation or secondary accreditation for programs through MOUs with other teachers. Again, registration of qualifications and unit standards on the NQS. 5 new qualifications were registered, bringing to total 36 qualifications for which the in-situ is accredited to quality assure. The key highlights for learnership was the target for learners with disabilities was exceeded by 299% in the period under review. The 348 high-potential black graduates completed the Wealth Management NQS Level 5 learnership. The focus has also been on reskilling opportunities through learnership. The funding for learnerships in the financial year under review was to the value of 19.5 million rand. bursaries to the value of $5.1 million were approved. Another big focus for the insurance sector is the Phase Fit and Proper project. And in the period under review, there was recognition of prior learning assistance in June and November, whereby 11,282 financial advisors set the assessments, 8,999 passed those assessments. INPITA remains committed to transformation. Beneficiaries of learning programs during the period under review was 4,313 women and 5,718 black learners, 213 of whom were people with disabilities. With regard to the training layoff scheme, INPITA had commissioned some research just to get some intelligence in terms of how the sector might be affected, and has allocated in its bursary scheme for the current year 8 million rand, which will be used also to fund training in respect of layoffs. In the period under review, there were no applications for assistance, but subsequently we've been notified of the possibility of layoffs by one of our larger insurers, namely Sanlam. I think in conclusion then, INPITA takes its skills development mandate seriously. I think this is evidence in the fact that it has recorded to date over 69,000 learners, approximately 55 of whom have successfully completed qualifications, skills programs, or unit standards. And we look forward to continuing the work that we've begun in the following years. We'd like to thank the Honourable Chairperson and the committee members for your time. Thank you.
We also thank you for the presentation, and the next speaker, Local Government Education and Training, please come forward.
Thank you.
To honourable members of Parliament, and my name is Keith Goodsell. I'm the chairperson of the LG CETA, Local Government CETA. I know everybody's under time constraints. On my right, I have our CEO, Sybil Mofokeng, and on my left, I have Ms. Nkosi, our CFO. And at the back, I have two of our board members, Mr. Killian and Mr. Veloko. And as everybody has said before, we all push for time, so I will hand over to the CEO to do the short presentation. Thank you.
honorable members, Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm intimidated by the honorable member, Nyakemba. Chairperson, thank you very much. I am not going to focus on the report of the chairperson. Just quickly focus on what we have done as a sitter. We work in a very distinct environment as local government. We are not an industry-based sitter. We are one of the five sitters in the government cluster, and therefore most of our work concentrate on supporting government initiatives, both national, provincial, and local government. I think central to that is the strengthening of public participation and deepening democracy, the work that most people are not, or most sitters would not be focusing on. I'm going to skip that, Chair. Our scope of coverage, we are servicing all 283 municipalities in the three categories as described in the Municipal Structures Act, the six metropolitan areas, local municipalities, districts, municipal entities, organized local government, and institution of traditional leadership, including traditional councils nationally. Our focus has been on the five key priorities, and those are informed by our research that we undertake periodically on 5 years. We do an intense research and our annual updates on the SSP. And really, we've been focusing on the five key areas, the one being municipal financial viability, infrastructure and service delivery, community-based participation and planning, management and leadership, and additional areas are the areas of ABET, workplace training systems, that focuses on supporting the work of training committees and local labor forums. As you know, local government is a very dynamic area of interaction. In terms of participation by municipalities, largely in the area of skills development, we have a 86% participation by municipalities. There is no municipality that is exempt from paying levy. All of them are paying except a few, particularly in the Northern Cape, who had staff of 40, some in KZN who are not able to pay. But largely those who can afford to pay are paying, and none of them are exempt. We have an 86% participation. In terms of the WSP and mandatory grants, we encourage municipalities to link skills development of employees' requirements to the municipal IDP, and I can talk about that later when we have an opportunity. All discretionary grant-funded activities that we fund are linked to the five key priority areas that I've mentioned earlier. Participation in broader government objectives, we work with those departments, CGTA, largely, who are also are a partner, a stakeholder in our board, previously known as DPLG, Department of Water Environment, around water purification, wastewater purification, sanitation, the development of Bank of Southern Africa with the development of artisans, the National House of Traditional Leaders with the training of leadership and traditional councils, National Treasury on the training of municipal finance officers on the competencies that municipalities must comply with by 2013. I'll speak more on the programs. Of course, SALGA and the Department of Public Works. What we've been doing, Chair, with the department and our partners, we engage on multiple programs and we signed memorandum of understanding with these institutions. Particularly, what was a highlight for us was the National Skills Audit project that was sanctioned by Cabinet. We were part of that. We funded that program. And we've currently completed all the Section 57 just to determine the skills baseline in all the municipalities and what the appropriate interventions would be. We've also looked at areas where municipalities are struggling a lot in terms of qualifications from the Auditor General, issues infrastructure asset management and training, and property valuation to support them with the implementation of the Property Valuation Act that has come into effect. I said, Chair, we work with communities. You'll see ward committee training. We're already training ward committees, which are organs of civil society that are really meant to support or deepen democracy at the local level. And so we've already started with a training of 3,600 thereof. Counselors, we're doing it on an ongoing basis. Our program for counselors include also ABET. It starts with ABET right up to leadership and management programs with various higher learning institutions. I'm going to skip that. One of our key highlights that we've achieved this year was really deepening the accounting and finance skill in municipalities. We're working with SAICA also to train 2,500 entry-level people in entry-level positions on the accounting, local government accounting certificate with AAT UK. There's a South African company that has been formed jointly with SAICA to focus on the skills of the low-level or entry-level positions in municipalities. I'll hand over, Chair, to the CFO.
Okay, just before the CFO, I want to introduce Honorable Marius Fransman, who is the chairperson of the education, of the higher education. This is the chairperson who will be dealing with you. Okay. In terms of financial performance, we are really dealing with local government. Things are not working. Okay. We've dispersed 122 million, and this disbursement accounts for 94% of what we have received through the mandatory grants. This represents the 86% participation. We had 86% participation in our sector, and then we've got the split per provinces. Because of being local government, we really have to be at the coal face at provinces. So we do look at how the provinces are performing. Okay, the chart below depicts mandatory grant disbursement, the province. We've got Gauteng being the highest again, and we've got Northern Cape being the lowest. We've got a few municipalities there. According to the Skills Development Act, we use 20% of our funds, which is discretionary grant income, from the Skills Development Levy to fund all the projects and discretionary grants of our projects. In the previous year, we spent about 62 million of this towards the project, compared to 34 million in 2007-08. So we're moving that quite a bit. The issues which were identified by the AG in our area, we had an emphasis of matter on 11,000 rand fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This arose due to the fact that we had a lease in our Devon office which was running, and then we needed to move from that accommodation to another office. But the new lease didn't allow for a fitting out process where we would have gotten the rental on a free, 1 month free rental. So we had to then pay the rental whilst fitting out. This led to a saving of 60,000 rand of salaries, because instead of paying the 11,000 rand, we would have lost salaries while the fitting was being done. And then we also had a non-compliance around the investment. in the previous year, which is being 2007 and 2008, we had over 2.5 million investments which were not compliant. We managed to clear out 2 million of those. We still left with about 500,000, which we will clear by the end of the year. We've taken processes to do that. We also had an issue around the cash management performance as required by Treasury. We actually cleared that with Treasury because what's been happening, we normally do our work on a monthly basis. We do cash management reconciliations. But the issue in this case was that the AG said they couldn't find proof that the CEO does review that kind of work. We've since developed a template which the CEO signs on a monthly basis. And then the other one was separate budgets were not prepared for project administration expenses. That's a non-compliance. It was really more the basis of how we are allocating project administration expenditure in our CETA. The AG couldn't find sufficient proof that we've actually done the work. So what we've done, we currently have implemented a time sheet with some of our staff members to be able to really allocate those project administration costs.
Yeah, we, and in the whole, we received an unqualified audit opinion. It was those matters that needed attention. There were two other matters that were raised. It was a question of two investigations relating to possible financial misconduct and the investigation into the validity of qualifications. Those processes are almost finalized. The board will finalize that. But it was also a question of controls. We've put in place a remedial process of tightening our controls around those areas. So that's all that we have to report.
Thank you very much. Honorable Marias, we are not taking questions. We allow all the sitters to present, and after that we'll take questions to or ask questions to all of them. Thank you. It's the next sitter. As soon as you are done, please proceed. Are you ready? Oh. There's a request that says we can proceed with the introductions, and then as soon as we are done, we will proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Ingrid Lowe, and I'm the acting chairperson of the MAPCETA. I have with me two of my colleagues, on my extreme left, Mr. Nhlanhla Ngubane, who represents the publishing sector. Next to him, Ms. Vuyi Manense, who represents the Communication Workers Union. We had hoped to have two more board members, but unfortunately, with the change in the program, they were not able to make it. Next to Vuyi, we have Becky Zulu, who is the CEO. Next to him, Sakana Makhoba, who is the COO, and on my right, we have Keith Keys, the CFO.
There's a matter that I want to bring in front of the committee before we proceed. I don't know. I can't put the names to the faces. So that's why I wanted to listen to this introduction, so that I know who is here. When we had briefings of all the sitters sometime 2 or 3 months ago, this sitter made a proposal or request that the chairperson of the CETA, not the acting, the chairperson of the CETA,
will not be coming. There was an explanation. But then later, an explanation that says it's busy somewhere, or there are some commitment of the sitter that is busy. Then later, I received a letter with the accompanying documents from the chairperson of the sitter complaining that she has been suspended. It's a very thick document. I then asked the Department of Labor to deal with the matter, referred the matter to the DG. And then I also received an information that the CETA was going to have a meeting. I don't know if it's an annual whatever, but it's a meeting where certain decisions were going to be taken. And the matter of the chairperson who has been suspended was going to be discussed. I then sent an email, some emails, I think a day before the meeting, because I got the information from the department the day before the meeting. Struggled, but on that morning I managed to get through to the CEO. Early hours of the morning, about, I think it was before 6 o'clock. Unfortunately, I'm up by that time, wide awake, but then I wanted to get to him before the meeting because I failed to get him through or get through to him a day before, and I wasn't sure if he received the email. And then I requested him that they must not make any further actions against the chairperson because the matter is in front of us and we are dealing with it. So I'm awaiting the report from the department. And now that the sitters are under higher education, I will definitely get the report and give it over to the current chairperson. But of course, since the matter was brought in to my attention, and at that stage when it was brought, I was still the person responsible from the parliamentary side, I will work with him and look at the report, and it will be at that stage that we will call the sitter in. Initially, I wanted to meet with you, but I realized that would I meet with you before these annual reports, I didn't want to meet with you before the matter is discussed by the committee, because if it comes to me, it will definitely come between to the committee. And I would not have, or we would not have time or enough time to have looked through to the issues raised. So that's where the matter is. There is another matter that has been brought to me, Chairperson. I don't know if you have received the letters yet. It's whistleblowers. It's about the CETA that presented last week. It's Education and Training Center, where the CEO is Mrs. Mwesi. I am not at liberty to say to whom are the allegations made against, because they are not here. But that one, because it came after the 1st of November, it reached my office after the 1st of November, I will not deal with it, because then the sitters are under the higher education. The letter has been written to Mr. Marias. They will be forwarded to him. He is going to deal with the matter. I think those are the issues that are raised or that are in the pipeline in relation to the sitters. We know that there are a number of problems that are there. I don't think I want to talk about the problems and the manner in which issues are dealt with. When you are faced with certain situations, I don't want to deal with that. But as soon as we are ready to meet with those sitters whose issues of concern are in front of us, we will do that. I don't know if you received, Mr. Ollis, all the parties, the opposition parties were copied, but about the education and training CETA, you were all copied. I know DA has been copied, and I'm not sure of the IFP. I know COPE has been copied. So I want you to know that the matter will be dealt with by the higher education, Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, the chairperson in particular, since the date it was brought to me. Please, you can continue.
Thank you, Honorable Madam Chair, Honorable Members. We would like to apologize to the House, I think, for the glitch that we seem to be having in projecting our presentation on the screen. But we'll continue, assuming that at least the Honorable Members have got copies of our presentation in front of them. And then I'll move just straight to slide number 3 on the presentation. And just maybe to indicate that MEPSITA came out of the administration process that was sanctioned by the Department of Labor, by the Minister of Labor, about 20 months from now. So we had the administration process, the administrator coming on board in October 2007 up to early April 2008. So the members of the board that we have here are people who have been at the helm of the CETA for about 20 months. And of course, I mean, with the executive management team, they've been at the helm for roughly about 18 months to something like with the CFO. He's just been around, this is his 11th month with the CETA. Having said that, the accounting authority, upon coming on board, they put in place mechanisms for good corporate governance. And then they then started appointing the executive management team. As already indicated, the CEO was appointed in June 2008. The chief operations officer appointed in July 2008. The chief financial officer, the first one, that is Mr. Kipchi's predecessor, appointed in August 2008, but he left the CETA in 4 months' time. So end of November, he left. And then Keith, who's our CFO now, came on board in January 2009. One of the recommendations that were made by the administrators, Professor Rauskoopers, was to also look at restructuring the CETA, mainly to hemorrhage the over-expenditure in terms of the administration budget of the CETA, but also to look at creating synergies so that the CETA could actually be able to perform much better than it did before. So that structure had to be implemented in July 2008. And then the board in August then embarked on a session for strategic planning together with executive management. And I think the results began to show in terms of now cutting the over-expenditure on the administration budget, but also on the side of the discretionary grants where there was huge overcommitment of funds, which are not in the system. And, of course, I mean, then we then began to see some improvement in terms of performance, in terms of monitoring of projects that have been in place, I mean, going way back to 2004, beginning to be wrapped up, and then learners beginning to trickle into the system. And then, of course, issues of compliance also got attended to. Next slide, please. And then in terms of the key achievements, of course, it's around compliance with the requirements of our various authorities, the main one being the Office of the Auditor General, the Department of Labor, and then, I mean, SACWA. And then also the impact that has been made in terms of financial by financial controls in terms of our expenditure. And then the CETA, after a two-year period of no commitment of grants because there wasn't money in the system, we then managed to commit about 38 million rands towards projects. And then also we then began to catch up and eradicated the mandatory grant backlog in terms of companies that had not been paid on time. And then in terms of the pre-2008-9 projects, quite a lot of them, about 28 million rands was actually then dispersed to those companies. And then we also made huge strides in terms of provider accreditation as well as an achievement, which was an area that for some reason or the other, you know, we weren't doing very well in. And then in terms of the performance of the CETA, maybe just to touch upon a few areas where we've had to play catch-up, especially in view of the fact that, I mean, some of these targets, nothing had been done prior to 2008-9, where areas around the training of skilled student facilitators against the SDF guide so that they could then be able to market the projects and also give out information. Also areas around the empowerment or support of Black economic empowerment firms and corporations, so we also had to play catch-up last year, you know, yeah, beginning to crack it for the very first time. But there are also areas where the CETA showed, I mean, overperformance, like, for instance, when it comes to ABET, in terms of learners that entered into the system, as well as those that completed the ABET programs, in terms of the 2.8, that is the employed learners that were undergoing programs like apprenticeships, learnerships, or who were allocated bursaries and also on internships. So in those areas, there was already, we managed to actually to overperform. And then, of course, I mean, other areas where we also had to play catch-up were around the Institute for Sectoral or Occupational Excellence, the ISOEs, as well as the new venture creation training providers, giving support to those so that they could be able to offer entrepreneurship programs. So we set targets of three, and then we managed to actually meet that target.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, and honourable members. I just want to give a very brief overview of the financial performance of the CETA and also look back in a little bit of the history of the CETA. The current slide on the screen reflects a very abbreviated position of the CETA for the 2008-2009 financial year. The CETA achieved a total income of 184 million rand, of which 132 million rand was expensed or disbursed to beneficiaries. If we have a look at the percentages, we've achieved 72% expenditure as against prior year's 95%. One thing we are still concerned about is the administration side of things, where we spend 138% of our revenue. But I think the CEO has already alluded to that, and we are addressing that currently, and I will allude to it further in my presentation. One of the issues that I think we, as the CETA, are reasonably proud of is the percentage disbursement we have in the mandatory grant area of 79%, which is slightly down on last year. But I think we are addressing that. We are getting out and encouraging participation in the CETA. The discretionary grants, I think we, as Becky's already alluded to it, there was a very, very poor expenditure on revenue, but that is make up of prior year overcommitments that we were trying to make up. And I will, as Becky has said, we've, during the course of this financial year, 2008-2009, that is, after some very close deliberation, interrogation, etc., etc., the board agreed to a discretionary grant in January this year of 38 million rand. Just to give an indication of how we've been going, administration, if we look at the 2006-2007 year, there was a 20 million rand overspend. 2007-2008, there was a 16.2 million rand overspend. And 2008-2009, a 7.6 million rand. As I've indicated, the predominant figure here is the in the over expenditure is carryover of projects that the administrator had directed were necessary for the CETA to remain competitive and to bring its costs down. Obviously, those overlapped into the current financial year with service providers were engaged in 2007-2008, but the business was only performed in 2008-2009. Discretionary grants I've alluded to, we had a 19 million rand deficit in 2006-2007, 27 in 2007-2008, and we had a surplus of 38 million in 2008-2009. Again, the surplus, excuse me, is attributable to the wariness of the CETA to go out on a discretionary grant call without ensuring that we have the funding availability for that purpose. Mandatory grants, we do have a slight surplus there of 21 million rand for the year, and obviously that 21 million rand gets swept into discretionary grants as is required by legislation. The CETA's come under a lot of stick for being harbingers of vast amounts of cash, and I just wanted to give the House an idea of our financial resources. The map CETA in the annual financial statements, you will notice that there's cash at bank of 172.7 million rand. Of that 172 million rand, there's an amount of 13.6 million rand that's attributable to donor funding from the Department of Arts and Culture and the CREATE SA project that we are running in conjunction with Department of Arts and Culture. If we deduct all our commitments and those sort of issues, we've got a balance there of 34 million rand available. If we take away the 13 million rand that's actually attributable to donor funding for special projects, the CETA itself has a figure of 21 million rand available at the end of March 2009 for discretionary funding. During August of this year, having obviously gathered some funding from discretionary grants that have been collected since April through to August, we were well positioned to issue another discretionary grant of 23 million rand for the 2009-2010 financial year. In terms of the audit findings, we need to highlight a few issues. There were carryover from the 2007-2008 financial year that were highlighted in the audit reports last year. Obviously, these affected our opening balances that we hadn't got around to addressing as yet, and they are currently in progress of being addressed. There were, in looking at the handover from the administrator to the seat management, the administrator's term of office came to an end at the 31st of March, which in reality is bad timing. 31st of March being the year end, there was inadequate time for handover to the new board, to the new management of the CETA, which obviously left a lot of gaps and a lot of problems for the new management to pick up and run with where the administrators had left off. And obviously, because of the handover, there was initial instability within the staff given some of the proposals made by the administrators. As I've mentioned, there was a significant amount of the over-expenditure attributable to carryovers from the administration, totaling a figure of 4.651 million rand. If we take that into account, we still overspend, I agree, but I think we brought it under manageable proportions. As a result of our requirement in terms of PFMA, and I've quoted Section 51.1A, we need to be transparent and we need to report back to our stakeholders, our constituents. We need to provide them with information. We need to get them to approve our annual reports. And to that extent, we expended a figure of 22,681 Rand late in November, 28th of October, to hold an AGM. That 22,681 Rand was purely a venue hire. And we managed to succeed in getting approval for our annual report, and we believe a very successful AGM was held, and with no major ructions in the system. And I'd like to hand you now back to the CEO.
Thank you, Madam Honourable Madam Chair. Now, in terms of the challenges, I mean, we still are dealing, having to grapple with some challenges within the system. I think, I mean, in terms of communication, it's one area that you've identified where we need to do a bit of work in terms of marketing our services, also keeping our stakeholders and the public at large informed about what MAPCETA is doing, especially as a CETA that has just come out of the cloud. We hope we're now out in the clear, we've turned the corner. I think, I mean, there are still some perceptions that maybe things are not going quite well at the CETA. And those of us, I mean, who work within the system, know very well that we are actually every day making headways. Of course, I mean, that also links to the budget image that needs to be cleaned up, and we hope that, I mean, we'll also get support even at this level, you know, in terms of ensuring that, I mean, like the other institutions, we also are seen to be a very critical entity that is rendering a very critical service to the public out there. The revenue, as indicated, we believe it's a bit limited for us, but of course it has to depend on the levy payer base that provides us with those kinds of funds, given the needs that are out there. You look at our sector, Madam Chair, you'll find that, I mean, most of the beneficiaries are non-levy paying entities. In areas of craft production, arts and culture and heritage, you'll find that most of those entities are very small, and there's a huge demand. I think, I mean, our government has identified the creative industries as one of the areas of growth, but it does not actually match the kinds of resources that we have. We believe also that, I mean, as a budding board and staff, including executive management, there's still a lot of work that we need to do in terms of ensuring that we build our internal capacity so that we can then begin to up the bar in terms of service delivery. So it's one of the areas that we're actually looking quite closely at, of course, with the limitations in terms of resources, but we're looking at creative ways of ensuring that some training does take place. Apprenticeship administration, this has also been another area. You'll note, Chair, when I present the next slide, that we're one of the cities that are quite big in terms of artisanship. We've got about 26 trades that we are offering at this point in time. So that's one area where perhaps, I mean, the CETA was not very quick to turn around in ensuring that some functions, like, for instance, the assessments, are actually not done internally. They are actually, you know, given to the providers. They become the responsibility of the provider. So we've had to deal with that, but we've made some headways. We are currently involved in a pilot that is looking at also the generation of qualifications that are linked to these trades. And that also then talks to the rest of our qualification base as well, you know, in terms of live events management, in terms of programs in music, in terms of programs in a wide range of other creative industry fields. The other area that we are working on quite frantically relates to the backlog in terms of certification. As indicated earlier on, that we've had to deal with programs and projects that go way back to 2004, which had not been properly monitored and properly closed, I think based on the challenges facing the theater. So it means that, we've got quite a number of learners that are lined up, but we've also had to see to it that, providers are properly accredited before, and verification is done before we could actually get the learners into the system. I will now hand over to my colleague, the Chief Operating Officer, Khan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to talk about the training level scheme. The CETA put the seed funding of about 5 million as an initial figure with the view of allocating a figure every time we advertise for discretionary grants. And then a project team has been put together. We came up with a very good project plan that we presented to the board that was approved by the board. And then we also have some board members that are supporting us in terms of the delivery on the training layoff scheme. And then we subsequently appointed a service provider to assist us with the capacity building and also just overseeing the implementation of the whole training layoff scheme. We've got a very good working relationship with the CCMA. We get a weekly report from them in terms of the companies that are in distress. I think at this stage there isn't any company that is under distress that is qualifying according to the framework. There are a lot of retrenchments that are happening within the MEP sector. But then we find that those companies do not necessarily fit within the requirements of the scheme. Okay, we took a conscious decision as a CETA that we'll proactively go out and conduct some research because we're not getting anything from the CCMA. So we are in contact with industry in terms of the checking whether there's anything that is happening within industry so that we can proactively help them. There's an advocacy campaign which commenced on the 2nd of November that the CETA has embarked on. What we are doing is that we go and we have identified the companies from the WSP processes, looking at the decline in the number of employment, because that's also an indication that there might be some potential retrenchments happening in those specific companies. So we did develop a research tool in the form of a questionnaire that is circulated to the identified 60 companies. We are currently sourcing that kind of data from our industry, and then we are collating that data outside the CCMA process. And we agree that if we discover that there are certain those companies are qualifying to go through the CCMA framework, then we'll advise them about the CCMA processes, and then they will embark on the CCMA processes to make sure that they also participate in the training of skills. And then, okay, we have conducted this research, and then the assessment process, we are currently receiving responses from companies, and then the assessment process will start on the 5th of November. And we'll put together a report, and then that report will give us an indication as to whether we are going to proceed. But I think it's very important to mention that at this stage, there aren't any companies that are qualifying according to the prescripts of this particular scheme.
Chair, during our last appearance, or maybe just on the radio scheme to add, in terms of the exercise that we've embarked upon, especially the research and also trying to suss out the sector in terms of what is happening there, it's been very interesting to notice that there are other kinds of models that are, that seem to be emerging from the system. Like, for instance, I mean, you've got the Freedom Park, where, you know, they were saying, look, at this stage, we can't actually declare that we're distressed, but we've got this challenge of about 15 of our domestic workers whom we would need to maybe let go. Whereas, I mean, if they were to be upskilled in a particular program, which is very critical within Freedom Park, then we'll be able to absorb them because that's where we're going to have, you know, opening. I also, I mean, in the past 2 weeks, visited Cape Town because we've got a lot of, I mean, printing and packaging companies around here, you know, just, I mean, on a face-to-face visit. And what was interesting was to take up the fact that, I mean, some companies, in order to save jobs, they've actually embarked on what they refer to as a short-time kind of models, where you'd find that the workers, instead of working for 5 days, for 40 hours, they actually work for three days. But then, I mean, then they are saying they are struggling in terms of then keeping them occupied in terms of the two areas. And also given the fact that, I mean, there is a sector that is mainly technologically driven, you know, technology changes very fast. They feel that, I mean, some of those employees, if they were to be upskilled in terms of now the new technology, they would then be able to absorb them into full-time jobs. So that's another thing that, I mean, we're still grappling with so that we can actually take, I mean, our proposals to the board and see whether we can't, you know, at a lower level of the training layoff scheme, look at other areas because we believe it is still the responsibility of the city to ensure that we assist the industries to upskill people so that they can absorb them in, back into jobs. The last time we appeared before the honorable members, we were also given a task to just to give an indication of the impact that MFCTA has made and is making out there. What we've done, I mean, with the learners that we've managed to get into the system today, because I indicated that we're dealing with a mop-up exercise, about 3,850 learners are already in the system. And, I mean, we've given a provincial breakdown. What is of interest, of course, is that, I mean, the three provinces, Gauteng, KZN, as well as the Western Cape, they have, I mean, the huge chunk of the pie. But it's also pleasing to know that, I mean, in the Northern Cape, we seem to be, at least, I mean, getting, you know, more numbers that I think are respectable. We've also provided further down in our presentation, without boring the members, with them this provincial breakdown in a graphic format. And then we also go on just to give an indication of the program so far where we have got learners with the 26 apprenticeships that I've actually mentioned, you know, learners, bulk of the learners being in those areas, but also areas like craft production and craft operations management, also having very huge numbers, which is an indication that there's a lot of work that we actually as MFCT are doing, mainly in the rural areas. Having said that, Chair, we also have compiled at this stage in a very, very crude form, because I indicated that we're busy on an impact study, which we're hoping that, I mean, by the second week of December, it would have been completed. We've covered a lot of ground in that area. But tied to that exercise, we're also just, I mean, getting learners and maybe the providers just to make comments in terms of how they experienced our programs. And we've compiled just a very small booklet, which is in a briefed format, just to give the members a sense of some of the comments that are coming out there of the learners and what kind of jobs are they already in. And some learners, you'll notice that they already are running their successful small enterprises. Having said this, Chair, thank you very much.
Are you done? Oh, thank you very much. You will have questions at the same time with all other speakers. Is the Mining Qualifications Authority. Thank you. please continue.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, it's a pleasure for the MQA to come and present the annual report. I'm Thabo Gazi, the Chief Inspector of Mines and the Chairperson of the MQA. And on my left is the CEO, Lebo Nangobela, and the Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Floris Prinsloo, and the CFO, Eunice Omar, and the member of the board from the employer side, Vusi Mabena. In the last year, a lot of things were taking place in the sector, the mining sector, employing almost half a million employees, 500,000, and we know that the skills levels vary significantly in the sector, and so we present the annual report with the motto, Digging with Skills and Knowledge, a maxim that really characterizes the MQA view, guiding principles in dealing with the challenge of skills in the sector. There was a presidential audit report that slanted or linked the higher level of accidents and death in our sector to low levels of skills and education in the sector. There has been retrenchment, and our strategies and implementation mode in the last year captured and reflected those challenges. So the CFO will take us through the CEO will take us through the annual report presentation.
Honorable chairpersons and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Labor and colleagues from CITAS, thanks very much for this opportunity. We will very quickly go through our presentation at a very high level note. When we prepared, we had gone into some details, but I will just whisk through our presentation without wasting the house time. Broadly, those are our strategic objectives, which have been determined by the board, which really determines what the MQA is all about. And I won't go through them since the chairperson has indirectly covered those. That's our business model, and I don't think the honorable chairperson will have interest in how we do our business planning process at the moment. Our legislative mandate, it's slightly different from many other CITAS, and I think it's important to raise it because we are also established on the basis of the Mine Health Safety Act, which gives us very close linkage with the Department of Mineral Resources, and which makes it compulsory that the Chief Inspector of Mine, Mr. Gazi, here to be the chairperson of the MQA board. And that links broadly around governance and other legislative provisions relating to mineral and resources in this country. They are very closely linked or referred to the Mining Qualifications Authority. The MQA has governance structures like any other CITAS, and it assists us in running the CITAS very effectively. On the issue of governance, it's important for me to say that the MQA achieved an unqualified audit opinion from the AG from the previous financial year, and we have always done that in the previous financial year. And we do this because of the number of committees which we use, the Financial Management Risk Committee, and a number of controls which we have within the organization itself. The important area which I thought the committee has mainly an interest on, as stated by the Honorable Chairperson, is around our statement of financial performance. If you can see, our annual income for the year in question was 542 million. And our expenditure, both including mandatory grants, the administration and discretionary grants, was 479 million. The administration grants are managed within the very same control of the MQA. We meet the 10% requirement. And annually, we send money from the administration income into the discretionary grants, which is a good thing that there is more money for the discretionary grants. And on the mandatory grant side, the participation is about 84% for the year in question on the submission of WSP, that is Workplace Skills Plan and Annual Training Report. But we have seen that it's growing in this year. Our accumulated surplus at the end of the financial year was 275 million rand, of which 200 million is commitments. I think it's important to state that, because commitments means that if you spend commitments during that course of the financial year, or even in such a way that your commitment exceeds your income and the surplus which you have, then you get a qualification from the Auditor General. I won't go into detail. I think our chairperson actually covered the area. We just wanted the House to understand the employment by the subsector which we have: jewelry, gold, diamond, and coal. And actually, where do we have the majority of our employees in the sector? In the sector. And actually, if you look at where we have more employees, it relates to where they are located, and it links to the commodity in terms of the amount of the commodity we mine most. I mean, 43% in the Northwest, predominantly platinum, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga. So that's the distribution of employees out of the whole sector which we have. Occupations of women in the sector, which is the challenge around transformation in the sector, we have put it around, and we are gradually seeing some growth because of the learnership intake, the number of learners which are taking up, and graduate development programs through our programs. They are gradually starting to increase. And actually, we have developed a career guidance so that actually from high school level, there is more even interest in mining-related profession. And we have a math and science project, which we do in all the provinces to support that process so that more women can participate in the sector. Briefly, those are the employment trends which we have per commodity, per sector. I mean, the high one, which is slightly orange by my color issues, it's gold. It reflects by the 80s, gold was employing about 500,000, and a decline in the industry. So there's sort of movement in the mining industry, per commodity. So some commodity could do well, others can do not well at all. This slide reflects the distribution of skill per different categories, and those are managers and professionals and technicians. Actually, it will explain slightly better in the next slide, where it reflects professionals, technicians, and machinery operators. And if you see the number, we extracted those numbers from the Workplace Skills Plan, which is submitted to us on annual basis, which is actually really a moving target. So our decisions are predominantly based on those numbers. So we have learnership supporting the technician, trade workers, machinery operators, and that's where the artisan development area are. And the professionals, which are, guides us so that we have bursary scheme and also support to university and dealing with universities. With technicians and trade workers, as I said, it's artisan development, working with FETs, and so on and so on. And the bursary scheme is very huge. As you have seen in the annual report, it has about 750 learners in the system. We spoke about operational statistics. I spoke about the submission of WSP. The slides on which I'm going through now is around achievements, and I've noticed that probably the House was not very much interested in this, so I'll quickly just go through them. The 84% of mandatory grants participation is the average which we have, and we always focus on the scarce and critical skills, and we have compiled the scarce and critical skill guide for the industry so that the industry knows which are the scarce and critical skills in the industry from year to year. We extracted from the WSP, which is the Workplace Skills Plan, although the number changes, the broader top 20 categories of skills does not really drastically change from time to time. Our achievement relates to standard generation, which we did in the previous year, 30 new qualifications, 30 learnership, 30 skills program. We have technical reference group, which reflects the participation by industry within the MQA. And those are the targets in terms of the different NSDS area, where the target in aggregate was 6,100 learners for the both employed for the employed learners and the entered we have 9,725, which shows that we have exceeded. That goes through to employed learners in terms of completion, and also exceeding in the next slide around our achievements on the unemployed learners, where the target was 1.3 and 659. Our achievement was 154 and 660, respectively. And those achievements also relate to issues around the entering of learnerships and around 9 core artisans qualifications were registered also during that period. I think it's important also to raise that issue. I bet it's very important for the industry for because it eliminates illiteracy in the mining and mineral resources, and those are our numbers which we are involved in, and it shows a lot of achievement in ABET, which is also a challenge in terms of take-up from the CETA side. We wish we can take more learners around ABET. Their project around mineral beneficiation, ex-mine workers, new venture creation, and those are the sub-projects which we run from the MQA side. I think at this moment it's important to go to the to briefly just show you that, Honorable Chair, that we have achieved very well vis-a-vis the DOL scorecard, which is the slide, and the score reflects the excellent. And where there are areas of challenges, really, is the decline in the number of employers in the industry. And we have actually addressed that matter with the Department of Labor in terms of our targets, because the number of employers actually fluctuates, and some of the time they go down. And if you look at that area, there are other areas of improvement. And in this financial year, which is the end of the NSDS 2, we made sure that we will, in aggregate, have exceeded all the requirements, which is in terms of the NSDS. Lastly, in terms of challenges, unlike a challenge, really, that income issue, is that it's very difficult to predict our income. So when we do budgeting in the beginning of the financial year, we are not certain about our income. And most of the time we realize that our income has actually increased more than what we anticipated. Even during this period of recession, there is more income which is coming in because our income is determined by other issues instead of retrenchment only. The other issue is the learner uptake. We are working hard with our employers in the industry to really make sure to investigate all the bottlenecks of uptake for learners on learnership, ABET, and all other related programs which we have. I think the certainty has been established now with the announcement by the Minister of Higher Education and Training around the issue of CETA re-establishment and the next skill strategy. And I think there is much more certainty around that. It's very important for me just to add in terms of conclusion that there are a number of projects which the board has already approved in terms of the improvement of the whole MQA process. One is around disability. So we are going to, we have started in this year and the next financial year to pick up a lot of issues around disability and accommodating them in our workplace. We have already allocated 30 million on the training layoff scheme, which we are going to the industry. The training layoff scheme has been spoken about by most of my colleagues. We have already started going to the industry, but the industry is telling us it's slightly late for the training layoff scheme, but there is slightly step and a gradual response from the industry to pick up the training layoff scheme. And that compelled us to actually put on a new project, which is the training voucher scheme, which has also been approved by the board, to address those who have already been retrenched. And we'll run through the project until the financial year end and review some of those issues. The important area is also math and science, which I spoke about, which we support math and science in all the 9 provinces to increase the supply. I mean, our colleagues from the forestry industry spoke about their industry is not sexy. Maybe I could steal his words. So to make it sexy at very young age, we do math and science and develop career guidance so that more learners at very young age, that mining industry is not only about death, it's not only about drilling, there are other opportunities available. Thank you.
Thank you, M2A. The last CETA is going to be Meseta. And there is tea at the back and some sandwiches. We won't have a long break, so we are encouraged to go to the back and get something to eat whilst we are proceeding with the meeting. Sorry, so you can proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, Honourable Members of Parliament, CETA colleagues. I am the chairperson of the Meseta Governing Board. Next to me is the CEO, Dr. Raymond Patel. Then we have the Chief Financial Officer, Bula Zirini, Corporate Governance Manager, Mr. Tom Kwanazi, Corporate Services Manager, Muketinyana Mayongo, and my deputy, our deputy chair, Mr. Michael Chayana. The Manufacturing and Engineering and Related Services Education and Training Authority facilitates skills development in 5 subsectors: metal and engineering, auto manufacturing, motor retail and component manufacturing, tire manufacturing, and plastics industries. These subsectors consist of 44,000 companies and over 600,000 employees. With regard to board oversight for the year under review, once again, brilliant governance and the execution of fiduciary responsibilities as an induction program was introduced, which resulted in a more effective and focused stakeholder participation, and once again, Masita's performance was beyond reproach. Masita responded to government priorities by subscribing to decent work, quality education and training, fight against crime, rural development, health. Dr. Patel will elaborate on these initiatives. We also responded to the global economic crisis with our retrenchment assistance plan and recent participation in the government training layoff scheme. Lastly, we received our 9th annual unqualified audit report. Thank you. Dr. Patel.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the House and colleagues, for the year under review, we experienced the economic meltdown during November, and it hit our sector the hardest because it was the metal and auto manufacturing sectors. We then had to radically refocus our priorities to ensure that we become relevant to the sector and the sector could weather the storm. In that year, we also lost 40,000 jobs, which meant that our levies had to reduce. However, our levies remained at 697 million rand, with additional income bringing it to 817 million rand. Our number of levy-paying companies decreased from 12,784 to 11,913. And as I said, our levies increased slightly. We also decided that this year was the year that we needed to respond to the needs of our sector and the community as such. And as such, we introduced the voucher implementation program, which we piloted the first year. This program saw that 6,700 small, micro, and medium-sized enterprises being beneficiaries of our program. Programs included such as switchboard training, communications, management improvement, mentorship, financial capacity, and skills. For us, the program touches all, from sweeper to managing director. We also piloted the recognition of prior learning program the year before. This program really looked at workers who've been working in the metal sector and the plastic sector for over years. And through various initiatives, especially driven from the union side, we recognize those workers by putting them onto a certain level and then increasing their training, as I would demonstrate later. Overall, more than 21,000 beneficiaries have been reached through our learnership programs, apprenticeships and bursaries, and experiential learning. For the year under review, too, we certified 13,703 learners and apprentices by Mercita qualification. Another highlight for us this year, Madam Chair, was that we partnered with South African Revenue Services through a roadshow that focused on tax allowances and the National Treasury introduced in October. In doing so, we also introduced an electronic submission of the WSPs. Like SARS, us submitting our personal income tax, we did it with our WSPs. We had a huge uptake, and we really got the sector much more involved. One of our key highlights this year, Chair, was the Accelerated Artisan Training Program. This program received the sanction of a host of institutions, including the South African National Defense Force, the South African Navy. We are currently partnering the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Department of Infrastructure Development. Through this initiative of UIF and DID, we have 165 learners, and we are hoping to scale it up to 350. In the like vein, this year, Chair, was also critical for us that we re-looked our concept of EBIT. It was just not a quantitative response, but we looked at the qualitative response we had to make for that year. We then had to re-look at
whether we're going to enroll people just for EBIT because of EBIT, or we introduce new EBIT. We introduce the accelerated EBIT, which takes into cognizance that adult learners have a basis of understanding, and therefore start training them with that basis and accelerating the training instead of just going the normal upper circlunkers arc. We really changed that. We went on to a business EBIT, and these are adults who are, or business, or rather workers who would be retrenched or could be retrenched and would use their pension differently. We introduced a business EBIT. We also introduced an occupational EBIT, focusing on what a learner or an adult learner needs to know to make him much more productive. On the internal frontier, and I like to emphasize this, we moved away from a reliance on consultants. We increased our staff capacity and constantly do so. We introduced our own research team, doing our own SSP. We worked very closely with the universities of technology, other institutions, and so forth. We held our first national conference during this year, never before with Mercita held a conference. And this conference is really to look at a few issues, such as, is Mercita the correct CETA? And we debated very robustly about this. The efficacy of the QCTO, the landscape of CETAs, and so forth. And we came out there resoundingly that the Mercita is the right CETA. During the year, we also looked at our discretionary grants and maximized it, as our CFO would expand on that. We've actually reduced or improved our surpluses or reduced our surpluses by 40% from the year under review. Doing so, Chair, we introduced a different concept. We call it a memorandum of agreement with our companies. Now, we categorize our companies into three categories. Firstly, top training providers, developmental companies, and new training. The top training providers had to comply with five requirements, namely, have trained for the last 4 years, have submitted the WSP, learners have passed more than 65%, and there's a continuous improvement and placement of these learners in continuation of around 50%. And lastly, there must be a workplace skills committee at this particular factory for that to comply. But most of all, Chair, the year under review was, as I said, critical for us. The global recession hit us. We had to refocus. We introduced the new venture creation learnership. 613 previously people who were employed benefited from this program, where we trained them business acumen. They were artisans. We trained them the necessary business acumen. The board, Chair, why I think we need to give the recognition to our board is the board had the foresight in October last year, when the crisis hit America, to start thinking how it would affect South Africa, and then approved an amount of 80 million rand for the retrenchment assistance plan. It was before government introduced the training layoff scheme. All of our learners, Chair, that we mentioned earlier, 65% of the learners are taken up into industry within the first 3 months after completion. We've tracked them. 27% within the first 6 months, first 3 months after, which really gives us a resounding 92% of learners that are trained by the Mercita are taken up. Also, we received our ISO 9001 certificate during the year under review. Our achievements on the NSDS, Chair, I won't go into details with it. I'll speak to the scorecard now. There's two areas we did not make last year, was the EBIT and the assistance of workplace experience. Now, EBIT, Chair, as I did say, we commissioned a research the year previously to that, where we really had to look at the concept of EBIT. And that's when we brought in that business EBIT, occupational EBIT, and accelerated EBIT. So we understand why we didn't make that target. As I would indicate to you, our current statistics, currently year to date, if the first column, Chair, is what our targets are, the next column is what our achievements are year to date or for the period from 2005 to 2009. As you do see, Chair, we've surpassed almost all of them, including EBIT. We've now enrolled over 12,000 learners, whereas our cumulative target for 5 years is 10,000. We were still battling with the achieved EBIT, and that's what we're working on. In terms of employed learners entered, our target was 15,000. We've enrolled 43,000, with 18,000, almost 19,000 having completed to date. In terms of unemployed learners, target 15,000. We've enrolled 23,000. Our target for achievement is 7,500. We have over 11,600 completed already, and the year's not ended. So we're quite confident that the MERCETA will make all its targets by the end of the year, Chair. For the year under review, we had a score of 4.53 out of 5, which translates into 113.25% of our targets. So it was quite a good success that we've reached last year. Project that we're involved in is the Accelerated Artisan Training Project, the RPL, Recognition of Prior Learning, our EBIT, and we categorize them under those three categories. People with Disabilities, HIV/AIDS, Bursaries Project, Science and Engineering and Technology, and this project focuses on learners at school level that would enter into the technical field. So we spend an amount of 12 million rand on this particular project. Voucher Implementation Project, we also entered into a partnership with the Gauteng Department of Economic Development by looking at air conditioners within government in Gauteng being fixed by learners that we've trained or through our initiative. New Venture Creation, a Retrenchment Assistance Program, our Toolkit Program, Chair. We believe that we cannot send learners out, especially learners from a disadvantaged background, who qualify as artisans without the necessary toolkit. So we buy them a complete toolbox during the training, which becomes theirs once they've qualified. We've also embarked on the Accounting Technicians Project, which is one of the projects we believe that proper accounting and proper financial accountability is imperative to our sector.
The MERCETA has had a sound, is in a sound financial position and has had a successful year. The highlights of our financial achievements are the levy income increased by 11% from prior year to 697 million. The mandatory grant payout ratio increased to 70% from 62%. Our direct training expenditure increased by 176%. Although the MERCETA continues to have large discretionary grant reserves of 974 million, these are now 70% committed. The MERCETA received an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General and there was no irregular expenditure. The summary of our financial performance against last year shows the movement in the major categories. The levy income, the increase is partly inflationary and also partly due to the effect of retrenchment packages. Our contributing firms decreased by 7% from 12,784 to 11,913. Our investment income increased by 55%. This is mainly due to the higher interest rates that were in effect for most of the year, as well as the higher cash balances that we hold. Our total income is therefore 16% above prior year. Our mandatory grant expenditure increased by 25%, which is above the increase of 11% in the levy income on which mandatory grants are based. We improved our WSP submission platform, and we had greater employer participation due to greater employer awareness. The discretionary grant expenditure increased by 149% due to the MERCETA undertaking a new method of discretionary grant allocation. All employers were required to apply for their full year discretionary grant requirements upfront, and these were allocated under 5 criteria. A memorandum of agreement was signed with each employer, and one-third of the full year's allocation was paid upfront to allow the employers to undertake marketing and recruitment exercises. So the MERCETA paid 291 million under these upfront payments. These amounts are recoverable according to the MOA until evidence of training has been received and the MERCETA has verified this training. Therefore, at year-end, 124 million of the 291 million was in prepayments in the balance sheet and 172 million had been expensed. The project costs increased by 244% due to a number of pilot projects now being completed and now being rolled out as full projects. The admin cost is at 9.6% of levies and is within the 10% limit.
The net surplus for the year is 161 million, and the Masita has made strides in reducing the amount of surplus compared to prior year.
Chairperson, I just want to add, we've reduced it by 44% from the prior year.
The three-year analysis of the main categories gives a high-level overview of the direction in which the Masita is moving and shows that in most cases we are moving in a positive direction. For us to talk about our performance, we need to also talk about employer participation because we are dependent on employers to pay levies as well as to participate in our training programs. The number of registered employers dropped slightly during the year from prior year. However, the number of active employers, these are employers who participate in our training activity, has increased by 3%. As I said before, the number of contributing employers decreased due to the negative effect of the economic downturn. Our financial position shows our two main assets as prepayments of 124 million and cash and investments of 931 million. It also shows reserves of 988 million. The surplus increased our cash and investments by 7%, and the cash and investments represent 60 months levy income. The increase is due mainly to the long-term nature of our training programs. Our programs stretch up to 4 years, as well as legislation which says that we can only commit the funds that we already have on hand. Funds that are not immediately needed for that month's requirements are invested on the money market at 5A-rated financial institutions. Masita takes a risk-adverse approach in investment. The security of our funds is paramount and is over the investment return. We've got an investment committee which oversees this investment function. The other main asset is the 124 million in prepayments, which is the amount for which companies and employers have not yet given us evidence of training implementation. These companies are continuing with training, and this amount should be expensed in 2009-2010. The discretionary grant reserve is at 974 million, of which 70% was committed at year end. This is an increase from the 44% from prior year. Again, the reason for this large discretionary grant reserve is the long-term nature of our program, as well as the fact that you can only commit what we already have on hand. Each quarter, the Masita reassesses its commitments, and if there are any free funds, we allocate these to employers. The Auditor General gave us an unqualified audit opinion. We had a good report on corporate governance, risk management, and our internal control system. There were no material adjustments, and we had no irregular expenditure.
Chairperson, just in conclusion, during this year we undertake for the year lying ahead, firstly to inform our stakeholders through legislative and constitutional process of our achievements of the Masita. This year we had 6 AGM, one AGM in Johannesburg, and then we went out to the provinces where we spoke to our stakeholders. The AGMs cost us quite an enormous amount of 245,251 rand, as reported in the BILT. I want to clarify that the cost of that was 307 rand per person, direct cost, and indirect was 192 if you take into consideration flights and accommodation. So we thought it was value for money in informing our stakeholders of the achievements. I want to add, Chairperson, that CETAs have achieved a lot over the 9 years, but have failed to communicate its successes, and we need to communicate those successes. We need to increase our learner uptake for the year under review, the year lying ahead. We need to offer an opportunity to gain work experience locally and abroad. I think it's imperative. It's one of the areas we did not make last year. We need to intensify our pursuance of government's key performance areas. We need to look at those. Those 5 areas that we have identified earlier, Chairperson: quality education and training, health, look at disability, look at HIV/AIDS in those areas. We need to look at fight against crime. namely the fact that we pull off young learners out of the streets and offer them learnerships and apprenticeships. These are the focus areas that the Mercita will be looking at. We want to move from the retrenchment assistance program project, which we initiated, to be in line with government's training layoff scheme. But at the same time, we take cognizance that retrenchment had started already in 2007. And there's a huge number of workers without employment. As a result of that, board has recently introduced or proposed a further 20 million rand that will be made available to retrenched workers. We've thus far expend 64.5 million of the 80 million, which involves 7,431 beneficiaries. 35 companies have benefited from the 80 million already. So we can see that amount is beginning to go, but it's slowing down too. It seems to be an improvement in the industry. Mercita has to focus for the next year, Chair. By September next year, we need to have gone into the re-establishment process, consulting with our stakeholders and understanding where we're moving to. Lastly, we want to comply with all legislative and financial requirements and ensure that the CETA is around. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CETA. Now we have come to the end of the presentation. We will ask questions to all the CETAs. At times, you won't say you are asking. We won't tell you which CETA, but you know which areas that you are responsible of. So the questions will be asked, and immediately after the questions, we will take a 5 minutes break, a quick break, and then we come back and answer the questions. Also give you time to share the questions among yourselves. So we can proceed, members, with the questions and clarifications. Can we ask questions, please? Babu Ndlovu, Honorable Ndlovu.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vulamathuba, actual targets. The targets, ma'am, that I want to thank you very much, madam, for and thank you to the CETAs for the presentation. May I ask the first question? It seems as if the actual targets are being put here, the actual and the targets. But I want to know how do they work out? What I'm trying to ask is January to December or December to December or whatever. How long? Because it doesn't say. That slide of yours doesn't say anything to me. It just put 2860. Target 60 and 28, and now actual 28, target was 60. Now that is very small, that's half. What's wrong with that? And the 55 and 135, the actual is 55, the target is 135. Something like that, something is wrong there. Well, I don't know. Can you just elaborate on that one? That's the first question. Do we ask one question, ma'am? I just want to know.
All the questions that you have, the Honorable Dov, the most important ones.
The second one, Chairperson, is which one is this one now? Forest and Industry Education and Training. The project, Home Care Based Workers Project, completed, were only in three provinces, the Gauteng, Northern Cape, and KwaZulu. What about the others? Don't you have another
home care basic workers in other areas. I'm trying to find out from you if you can elaborate on that. It's very important for us to know where do you take that line of thinking. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me stop there for a minute.
Honorable Miss. Thank you, Chairperson. I've got only two questions for the Research Center. They've made mention of the fact that through their national skills development strategy, they have managed to employ 1.319 unemployed learners. What I would like to know that are those learners permanently employed? And the other one, you've also had 4,365 unemployed learners who were skilled. After receiving those skills, is there any market for them to be employed, since we know that all learners should be placed on employment? My other question is for the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. That is on their slide number 12 or page 12. They have made mention of the fact that they have trained what committee, they had a what committee training for 3,600 what committees for only four provinces, that is the Northern Cape, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Eastern Cape. So I just want to know if they are prepared or to roll out their programs to other provinces. That is the Cooperative and Governance. My other question is for the Honorable President, in his State of the Nation address, has stressed the importance of rural development. Here, they have made mention that they are responding to the government's priorities. What is it that they are doing for the rural development? Since we know that most of the people from the rural development are flooding in the cities like Cape Town and Johannesburg. Thank you.
Honorable
thanks. Honorable Chairperson, Madam Chair, the question that I have first and foremost will be for FIETA, the forestry sector. In your presentation, you made mention that you are working with organized labor and unions that are affiliated to COSATU. You mentioned COSATU only. Now, my question, I want to know, you know there are other federations. Are they excluded deliberately so, or what is, why are you only working with unions that are affiliated to COSATU? You know, South Africa is a rainbow nation. There are many federations. Can you elaborate on this? And then you also mentioned that while training, one of your learners was blown from a pole. Are you meaning that there was a fatality, and how can one be so casual about the loss of life? Can you just elaborate on that? Or maybe it was just the language that was used, but we cannot be very casual about any loss of life, you know, whether the person that was blown from the pole, I don't know what pole it is, but is the person still alive or what, so on. And And then my second question goes to Isat Sitha. You mentioned or you identified challenges or problems in you not being able to evaluate the level of or the quality of the training that is offered by the employers in the workplace, but you are not giving us information or a program that needs to address the challenge that you have identified. Because really it is a challenge to say that you are not in a position to evaluate the quality or the level of the training that is offered from the 50% levies that you are paying back to companies to train. But you are not actually informing us how are you going to address your challenge. But there was something very interesting that came up from the MEP CETA of the model that they have made that would assist in finding out companies that are in distress and so on. But I think this model can also assist you in actually trying to find the impact or the quality of the training that is offered by the employers in the workplace. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Makubela. Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much, sir. The first question goes to all the sitters. How do you determine the remuneration of the CEOs in particular? What is your benchmark in determining remuneration of the CEOs? Or your executive management, if I may put it that way. I think that is important. The Masata, you spoke of retrenchment assessment plan, where you put 80 million before even the discussions, the results of the discussions to respond to the recession between government, business, and labor, before the CCMA processes were in place, you already had a plan. When the Department of Labor was here to present their annual report, they made mention of a pilot project which they are working with you. The pilot project which is in Gauteng. Now, what you have presented today, are you complementing what the Department of Labor has already reported to us, or is a separate issue altogether? Linked to that, there's I'm aware that all workers who are working in the metal and engineering industry have been called. There are centers where they're going to register, in particular in Gauteng. I'm talking that because I'm coming from Gauteng, so I know. There were people who were requested, in particular in Ekurhuleni region, in Wispik or in Alroad, where they have to go there and submit their details and as to what is it that they want to be trained on. since then, my sister disappeared. What are you doing with that? Because for me, you can't just call workers who have lost employment, give them hope as if something is going to happen now, only to find that there's nothing that is happening. So where are you with that project? The other question to Masita again. In your report, you made mention of recognition of prior learning, which is running very smooth. Fortunately, I'm from that industry before I became the Member of Parliament. My understanding of recognition of prior learning in Masita, on the basis of the chambers that you have presented here, it is only successful in the automobile industry because of similarities in terms of operations. So were you then, when you said that recognition of prior learning is very smooth, is good, were you only telling us about the automobile chamber within the chambers that you have? Because if you were saying across, then my submission is that that information is incorrect. In particular, there's a problem in the metal and engineering industry. Because of different operations, then it becomes difficult to run smooth with the process to a point where there's nothing that is happening. The other question, Madam Chair, is to what is INSETA, insurance, is also around the recognition of prior learning that we have conducted. The assessment was done to 11,282 and 8,999 passed. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? This 8,999 that have passed the recognition of prior learning assessment, are they placed or they have just passed? Were you assessing people who are already in the industry? Linked to that, the what happened to the remainder of those who did not pass? The difference between 8,000 and 11,000. What's happening with them? They didn't pass, so therefore, hallelujah. Can you say something on that? Map. Map, we know your difficulties. Not even the one that has been mentioned by the chairperson here. But something very strange, and I want to know what has happened, or what the board has done. Your admin expenditure, my little understanding is that administration expenditure is limited to 10%. That's my little understanding. Yours was at 138%, which then means you have exceeded the 10% by 128%. Obviously, there are reasons that will make us to understand. Why did you spend so much exceeding the limit? Because our understanding is that the skills levy is for transformation in particular. It's for transformation in different industries. So what is it that this money has been spent on? You didn't explain that. You simply told us that no, you have spent 138% on administration. Mining Qualifications Authority. Okay. On layoff. No, I assume that you are part of the process that is facilitated by CZMA. But however, there's no information that you received as to companies that applied and granted, in fact, met the criteria of CZMA. You also made mention of that employers are saying this initiative is late. Can you elaborate on this? Because I want you to elaborate on this. You understand the game is that this is a process that came as a result of NEDLAC processes, where business that includes the Chamber of Mines is part of business unit. So what are the reasons for them to say this is late? Because I think that this is a response to a crisis. Maseta, lastly. This bag we've just seen the people that we work with giving us bags. And then we're asking, where are these coming from? They're saying Maseta, Maseta. I hope when you will be reporting to higher education and training next year, this will reflect that you have spent money instead of training, you buy back. Because it's very much important. A bag might be equal to 20 rands. Now, if you count the number of these bags, at least one or two workers could have been trained. Thank you.
Honorable Kumalo. Thank you, Chairperson. To INSETA and ISET on the issue around training layoff scheme, wherein you may mention that you haven't received any application from the employers as your client in this regard. I just want to find out as to, in the absence of that application, does that suggest that you simply sit and forget, as the service provider, if there are those people that are in need from the employers to get the training? To theater, I would like to isolate theatre from these two because I haven't heard them mentioning the issue of not receiving the application. But I would like also to get information from theatre around the issue of those people that are retrenched from the companies. That is there any plan that is put in place to cater for those people for their future through the assistance of theatre? On local government, partly because it is covered, but I just want to check the time frame, if there is any, on the issue of training, of the World Comic training where on the provinces that I already mentioned. Obviously, they are on the left, on the provinces that are not mentioned here, there should be training that is extended to. But I just want to check the time frame. Is there any time frame that has been put in place as to when those provinces will be covered? Lastly, Chairperson, I think I would like to appreciate the map setter on the issue that is close to my heart on the issue of training day of skin, wherein they've already developed the research program and also identified the companies that are already in distress. That is very appreciated, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable Shelley. Thanks, Chair. I have just forgotten a question that is directed to ISET. You, on your slides, you mentioned that you've got 1,447 learners that were entered into learnership. And then you further go down and give us a breakdown provincially to say how many per province were trained. Now, I'm interested in knowing the provinces like Mpumalanga, who has only one learner, and the Eastern Cape, meaning knowing that these are rural provinces. I want to know whether was there any communication challenge, and what were the tools that you used to get these learners into the learnerships, or maybe you are really you advertised and only got replies from these provinces like Gauteng that has more than 1,000 people who are entered into the learnership. Can you elaborate on this provincial statistics? Thanks.
Thank you, members. My questions are few, mainly to all the sitters, the rollovers in your sitters, and the monies that were used for were used, not budgeted for. I'm sure you understand it's fiscal dumping, and the use of consultants or the service providers. That's the word that you are using. Which of you are using those consultancies, and for how long? Money spent, and why? In SETA, you have not come up with the budget for layoffs. There's something that you have not done in relation to layoffs, because you are busy with intelligence gathering as to how the sector should go about. Now, we don't know that you
possess the skills to gather intelligence and to tell us more. Well, what is that? What is this intelligence gathering in the theater? And the local government, the WADs, or the WAD committees that you have trained, what is different in terms of performance in those WADs? How are they different from the WADs that have, WAD committees that have not been trained? The qualitative difference. So that's that. We can respond to, or you can respond to the questions. The chairperson of higher education, Mr. Marius Fransman, who you will be reporting to in future from now on, will be giving his input, general observations, whatever he wants to say, because he has to leave. He's addressing one of the members addressing the House today. So he's going to leave before you, your responses. Over to you, Mr. Fransman.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you to the committee. Just to say to the Chairperson and the committee, thanks for making sure that this process would be that the transition is smooth from Parliament side. I think a month ago already we started to discuss this particular transition, that at least as we are getting annual reports that we are able to participate, or at least our committee secretary get the information so that we do not need, therefore, to have long deliberations on the historical stuff, but the report that the chairperson will be providing us from this annual report sessions to higher education and training, it really will enlighten us to deal with the critical issues into the future. Just the issue on some of the general observations. Clearly, today there is going to be a session in Parliament where the Minister of Higher Education, and I know they met the CITES last week, will be discussing and presenting what he agreed, not the reclassification though, but the extension. And therefore, in the next few months, from a parliamentary perspective, we are going to look at the reconfiguration and what is that model supposed to be. Is it 23? Is it 15? Is it 10? And if not, what do we put in its place? So that discussion is coming. I must say that our own assessment, and even in the meeting that, The link between the board, the principals, and the monitoring processes of the board vis-a-vis the administration, I think it's only in the last presentation that one has picked up the board and its responsibilities that came up front there. The transversal links between province, national, and local, the economic objectives, but also then the CETA responsibilities in that. But I want to come back to very specifically the comments then made by the chairperson just before the map sitter, because I was interested in those comments. Now, the CEO mentioned that the words that you've used is after being put under administration, a new board. But how new is the individual sitting on the board? Is it really a new board, or is it just a phrase loosely mentioned? Because in that particular CETA, I think what we have to say is there's a lot of good performing CETAs and a few bad performing CETAs, and we then need to be able to deal with that in the presentation that I've picked up, MAPSIT has come to mind immediately because you were in the administration, there was an intervention. Just a very direct question to the acting chair. Were you in the old board or not in the old board? You can just say yeah or nay. Okay. So you were in the old board. Okay. The reason why I'm posing those questions is precisely because the link and the responsibilities therefore linked up with the board vis-a-vis the administration and particular. So the document that you then received, it would be good if I can get a copy, Chairperson, also to understand the issues there. But then to say that I think it is, even whilst the transition has happened from the 1st of November, I think you're suggesting that at least you've dealt with some of those issues, and most probably myself and you, to actually engage further, if as early as next week, that particular structure, including, if needs be, the former or the person that's being said is suspended.